Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 98-year-old Ed Bates of Clovis, California, originally from Modesto, California. He actually lived on Oahu as a teenager, moving back to the Golden State just before Imperial Japan attacked. He dropped out of school at 16 and tried to join the Marine Corps, but we heard that story of how his attempt at forging his birth date was foiled. He ended up in the Merchant Marine very early on in World War II when the U-boat threat was the greatest.
That's an experience in itself, but you told us when you get to Tampa, you decide to jump ship and join the Navy.
Yeah.
So did you tell anybody that's what you were doing?
No. The first mate said... Well, as soon as we get the new, of course, they took us off the ship right away, and we went into a hotel. And he said, "Now, you're continuing with us, aren't you?" I said, "Oh, as soon as that Navy crew gets on there, yeah, I'll be all right with you." So that was the end of that.
And did you have any idea whether there would be consequences for that?
No, they couldn't do anything about that. I was a merchant seaman. In those days, there was no such thing as an organized merchant marine. If you had your seaman papers, which I had, because I was a seaman having sailed to Hawaii and back, and I could tie all the lines and knots and what have you, I reported aboard ship. When these submarines were causing all this problem, they ran our ship, a little Navy, actually it was a fishing vessel that had been painted gray, kind of a harbor thing. They ran us in. They ran my ship, a Russian ship, an English ship, and a Greek ship, all allies at that time, into a little bay. Well, for we were in first, so we dropped our anchor, and then as these other ships came in behind us, they said, "You're going to have to move further back into this harbor at nighttime, because we didn't." They told German submarines are out there. In the daytime, they had this one little tug, kind of a tugboat-like thing. We dropped our hook. Now, when you drop your, on old ships, nowadays, modern day, you have hydraulic stuff. But in those days, when your anchor is pulled back up, that chain has to go somewhere. And it goes into what they call a chain locker. It's about the size of this carpet, little carpet I got down here. It's divided into two parts with a steel plate about 4 feet high. One's a port anchor, one's a starboard anchor. So as we had to pull our anchor back up, each link is cast iron about maybe 14 inches high and 6 inches wide. They're heavy. So when it's coming down, you have to guide those around until the anchor is all the way up. A lot of work.
Sure.
So they drop you in through a little booby hatch in the top. Mm-hmm. So, of course, being 16 years old and full of vim and vigor, they had me down in there doing that. We did that. I did that. So we moved back in further, dropped that hook again. Another ship came in. So they moved us back further. I'm down there again doing that. And all of a sudden, the port anchor was released. Turned out that the bosun was drunk operating the winch. All I could do was jump on top of the anchor that was already, and it was still coming in. So it piled up all over me, and the other one was slashing around. Finally, it quit both of them. A sailor gets the booby hatch out, comes down, disentangles me from this anchor chain that was piled all over my leg and my arm. They pulled me up on deck. Laid me out. They said, "You shouldn't have allowed that guy to operate that winch when he was drunk." Anyway, we didn't have any corpsmen aboard, no medical. So they called over to an English ship, and they sent one of their guys over. He said, "Well, I haven't got any morphine to give you. Does anybody have any whiskey?" Well, one of the guys had a bottle of Cuban rum, so he poured it all over my leg. That's the reason I walk with a limp now. I poured it all over my leg. Got a pair of pliers-like things and pulled pieces of metal out of it. Then he gave me the rest of this rum, which I wasn't much of a drinker, but I drank it, battled it all up, and said, now when you get to a port, you're going to have to go see a doctor. He said, I put some sulfa drug on it. They didn't have penicillin early in those days. It wasn't until later on. So when I joined the Navy, they said, well, we can make you a third-class petty officer right now. So I went off to boot camp. When we graduated, they came to us and they said, now 50% of the company is automatically going to the armed guard. That's gunner mates aboard merchant ships. I said, fine, that's what I want. I had put in, they asked you for three choices. I wrote gunner's mate, and aerial gunner mate. In case I go, if I couldn't get on a ship, I'd get on an airplane. Mm-hmm. They said, well, half the company is going to the armed guard, the other half the company are going to pharmacist school to be medics for the U.S. Marines. Because this is early in 1943. Marines were on Guadalcanal. So I said, I don't want to have shots and stuff like that. They said, there's a few people going to service schools. So they read off on my name, you're going to radio school. So I went in to see a young, what I call a school teacher officer. He had just graduated with a degree in social sciences or something. And they make them personnel officers. I said, they got me going to radio school. I don't want to go to radio school. He said, I don't care whether you want to go or not. That's where you're going. You got the highest score in anybody in the battalion on that test, that radio test. I said, sir, I did not take that test. I was out teaching these yo-yos how to row. He said, I don't care. It says that you got the highest score. So I get to radio school. Officer comes out, experienced officer, submarine officer. But he was overage to go back in submarine, so they put him in charge of a school. It was University of Colorado. They had a radio school, Navy. He said, if there's anybody here that doesn't intend, there was 100 of us, to do the very best job of radioman in the U.S. Navy, step forward now. I step forward. So he comes up to me. What's your problem? I have no problem, sir. I don't want to be a radioman. What do you want to do? I want to be a gunner's mate. Come up to my office as soon as we break formation. Yes, sir. I go up there. He says, you don't know anything about it. I said, yes, sir, I do. I've been a merchant seaman. I've already been to sea for almost a year. I know exactly what I want to do. Oh. Well, he said, do you know how we work this? I said, no. He said, depending on your rating in the class, when you graduate, the number one guy in the class, we put up on a chalkboard up there, the USS Lexington airplane carrier needs one radioman. A brand new destroyer in Charleston, South Carolina needs one radioman. It goes all the way down. He said, depending on how you do, you get your choice of duty. I said, okay. So I came out third in the class. So the first guy got his, second guy got his, third one came up, brand new destroyer out of Charleston, South Carolina, just finished its sea trials, it's going to the South Pacific. I said, that's for me. I said, fine. Oh, just a minute. They got a star alongside your name. I said, what does that mean? He said, you remember those civilian guys that came here, civilian clothes, asking for everybody who had some degree of college? I said, yeah. Well, they had them fill out a bunch of papers and stuff, yeah. Well, you're going with that unit. I said, I can't go to that unit. I don't have any college. I'm a high school dropout. He said, I don't care. They got you picked. So I go get on a train, troop train, send me to some place. A guy comes running out dressed in a Japanese uniform, jabbering in Japanese, American. Then he went into English. He said, you're now with the United States Naval Intelligence Organization. You're going to learn katakana Japanese. Swore us all in, top secret. During wartime, they can send you to prison for the rest of your life or they can shoot you. So you can't tell anybody this, not even your own parents, nobody. I then learned how to intercept Japanese radio traffic and a lot of other things. Next thing I know, they came to us. They said, well, you haven't finished your course. But several of us had done so well. It's like music. Some people can get it, some people can't. Sure. Well, Morse code, to me, was easy. Mm. And I could type like a maniac already anyway. So he said, the Japanese have just bombed Dutch Harbor. At the same time, the Battle of Midway was going on. It was a diversion to get our troops up there. And they've also occupied an island called Attu in the Aleutian Change and another one called Kiska. We need 12 volunteers to go up there. So I was up there. And I spent my time up there primarily not actually shooting Japanese, but intercepting all of the radio traffic. We had broken the Japanese codes, naval codes. But anyway, so we did that kind of stuff. Well, one day, just before the Battle of Okinawa, Ensign Monroe, who was one of these guys he had taken off of Corregidor and made an officer, nice guy, actually, good man, he said, okay, we're sending you somewhere else now. I said, where? Well, I can't tell you. We're just going to send you to Pearl, and from Pearl you'll go out to the South Pacific somewhere. I said, okay, but I understand you got an outfit operating behind the lines in China. And he said, yeah. I said, I want to go there. No, you can't go there. I said, why not? Well, you joined the Navy after the war started. Those guys that are there, every one of them were pre-war Navy guys. So they're all guys that are 41, 42, 43, 40 years old. They're experienced guys, not only in radio and katakana, but they've been around a long time. I said, that's where I want to go. You can't go. So we had some stuff we called the Lucian Solution, which was a homemade form of wine. So I had some of that. So I wrote a letter to the Chief of Naval Intelligence, and I said, I told him my background. I said, I didn't join the Navy to go to Pearl Harbor to wait to be assigned to someplace. I want to go someplace where I can kill Japanese. I took it over to a merchant ship and had them mail it from the, because we had sensors, they wouldn't, during the war. So he mailed it. About a month went by, and Ensign Monroe calls me, and we're living in tents. He called me on a field phone, said, get up here. I got up there and he said, who do you know in Washington, D.C.? I said, I don't know anybody in Washington, D.C. He said, is your dad a high-ranking officer? I said, no. He was a private in the Army. He said, well, you got orders to immediately report to Op 20G in Washington, D.C. for further transfer to China. I said, oh? So I report there, and they said, okay, every morning you call in and give a code word. It was all fruits, like first day, orange, next day, lemon, grapefruit, stuff like that. Then he would say, no orders, no orders. They said, you have to go over to the Marine Corps and get qualified with the 45 caliber pistol. I said, I'm already qualified with it. Well, you have to do it again. So I go over there, and I did. Some Marine girls were watching this. So I went over to one of them. I said, she said, I see where you already qualified. I said, yeah. My dad had a 45 he forgot to turn in from World War I, and I used to practice. And so to make a long story short, we made a date. She was a stenographer, actually, at Marine Corps headquarters. So she said, well, I'm not too sure I want to go on a date with you. I was pretty coming on too strong. But she said, I have a girlfriend that said she wants to go out with you. I said, I don't want to go with your girlfriend. I want to go with you. So we had a date. And then I used to go over and see her, and she'd say, are you a deserter? I said, why? She said, don't make any difference what time I tell you when she's off duty, you're available. Well, then one day I said, well, I'm catching a plane. I'm going someplace. Can I come and see you off? I said, yeah. She came to the Naval Air Station, kissed her goodbye. She said, well, you'll write. I said, no, I can't write. Well, you can phone me. I can't phone you. She said, it sounds like a line. I said, no, it's not a line. I can't do it. I got on a plane, flew to Calcutta, India, got off the plane, another sociologist come out, said, you guys come over to my quarters. He had just had a shack. There was 12 of us. Said, you're going over to relieve those guys that are over there. You have to fly over the hump 15,000 feet or something. But he said, you don't have to fly over there. I said, well, sir, there's no way we can walk over there. He said, no, you'll hear about it. We dropped a bomb on a city in Japan, blew the city down and killed everybody in it. I said, how long you been over here in the sun? He said, no, it's called an atom bomb. And next week, if they don't quit, we're going to drop another one. And they did. And I flew back, engaged my girlfriend. We got married. We were married 57 and a half years. The sheriff retired, so I was elected sheriff for 4 years, then another 4 years, then another 4 years. And then I retired. And they had been asking me to teach at Fresno State, so I did. I did that until I was 65. It was a good thing because I had to teach them the academic aspects, but I could tell them real true stories about law enforcement.
He's written about some of those real true stories in a book I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. It's called Arson Investigation, but it also includes other cases from his years as sheriff of Madera County in California. One that received national attention was the Chowchilla school bus kidnapping. He's got an entire chapter on that. And before we're done on the radio today, some of the secrets Ed had to keep while serving in naval intelligence that he's finally allowed to talk about now. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.